We all know we should be taking care of ourselves, checking up on others in our lives, taking a break from our phones once in a while, and honestly, the list could go on. It could be our ticket to more meaningful friendships, more meaningful lives, but how often do we actually do that? Our next guest wrote a guide that is practical, realistic, and lays out exactly what we need to be better at being there for ourselves and being there for others. And we want to hear from you. Call in now at 800-642-1234. How do you find yourself showing up for others? Are you actively trying to get better at paying attention to how our friends and family are doing? Have you recently tried making new friends, or is there a hobby that you do just for yourself? Call in with your experience. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our guest now is Rachel Wilkerson Miller. She's a deputy editor at Vice and author of The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. Rachel, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am well, and I'm really excited to talk to you about this because the art of showing up, just the actual act of doing it, is way easier said than done. So can you talk about what it means to show up?
Definitely. So I think of it as first and foremost about bearing witness to your own life and to the things you're going through, and then to the things that other people around you are going through. But beyond that, I think you can kind of break it down into four steps. So it's noticing, you're just perceiving behaviors, words, circumstances that are communicating a need. It doesn't have to be that deep. It can just be like, I'm noticing I feel tired today. Beyond that, it's processing. It's using the knowledge that you already have about yourself, about the person that you've noticed this in, and kind of running it through that lens of what else does this connect to? Have I been tired every day this week? Okay, that's interesting. It's also naming the thing, just the what's really going on here. Is there something deeper that this reveals? Sometimes noticing and naming are really similar, just saying I'm tired or I'm really exhausted. I think exhausted, you can see how using a different word, naming it as such, makes it feel a little different. And then the fourth step is responding. So that can be as simple as like, I need to go to sleep a little bit earlier tonight. Or if a friend, if you're noticing this in a friend, maybe you say, hey, every time we've hung out, you've mentioned that you're feeling really exhausted. Is everything okay? Do you need anything? What, you know, what's going on? So that's how I think of it. A lot of times we do these things automatically, but it can also be helpful to slow down and kind of make sure you're doing all of them.
Well, people, and I will include myself in this, sometimes go on autopilot. If someone asks how I am, I might say, oh, I'm fine. Or they, if I ask, you know, the same question, they might be like, oh yeah, everything's fine. And it feels like that fine has become a catch-all, even when things may not be fine. How do you, as part of showing up, both for yourself and for others, you know, kind of tease that out?
Yeah, I think that, you know, sometimes it's tough because things are fine, all things considered, even when you're doing really badly. And that can be a hard thing to communicate. But sometimes when I'm going through a rough time, I'll say that I can, you know, I might say like, you know, everything is pretty good in so many areas of my life, but I'm feeling really bummed about this one thing, or I've been not feeling physically well lately, or just being specific. You know, we're complicated people, and you can just bring up these small things that are maybe chipping away at your overall sense of well-being without it having to be, you know, like opening up and being really vulnerable about every little thing that's going on in your life. Sometimes it's enough to just say like, you know, I've been having a little bit of a hard time lately going to sleep at night, or connecting with my kids, or whatever the case may be.
We are talking to Rachel Wilkerson Miller right now, deputy editor at Vice, and she's the author of The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. Now, let's look at this book. It's in two parts. One part is focused on showing up for yourself, and the other part is showing up for others. Why was it important for you to, you know, kind of pull these two issues apart?
Well, I think that it's twofold. First, you just simply can't show up for other people unless you're showing up for yourself. And I think we all know that on some level. We've heard the metaphor of like, put your own oxygen mask on before helping other people. But that doesn't mean we always do it. It's easy to say, oh, that applies to other people, or yeah, but I'm too busy right now. So I think it's like really important to stop and spend a lot of time there, because if you don't show up for yourself, you're going to get overextended, you're going to get resentful, you're going to burn out. So I think that's so important. But also, I actually think that the same sort of advice and process applies to both things. And once you start showing up for yourself and going through the process of saying, why do I do certain things or what do I need, and having compassion for yourself, it becomes so much easier to show up for other people, because you realize like, oh, sometimes I'm a little cranky when I haven't had lunch or something to that effect. And so then when somebody else is a little cranky, you can say, hey, are you okay? Or do you need something to eat? So it's just like, once you recognize these things in yourself, it's so much easier to extend the compassion and the grace to others.
Well, and part of that is getting to know yourself. We all are the narrator and the hero of our own story, even if maybe sometimes we're the anti-hero in our own story. How do you advise people to challenge the narratives that they have either set up for themselves or the narratives that have been set up for themselves by other people?
I think one thing that can be really helpful is just sitting down and thinking through, what are my values, which sounds a little corny or maybe a little forced. But when you sit and think through it, you probably will start to realize, oh, I actually do. When you look at a list of values, it's pretty easy to be like, oh, not that, not that. Yes, this. And you realize so many of the decisions you make in a given day are tied to your values. Like, they really underpin everything we do. So I think that's a really great place to start. And you can start to think about, okay, what are my values? And then what are my priorities? You know, maybe my values are family and friendship, but my priority this year is my career. So even though I really value this thing, I'm going to put it on the back burner consciously. And I think that's also really helpful to know why you're doing things. So looking at values and priorities is a really good way to do it. But a more fun way to do it that I always recommend is doing personality tests, which, you know, I don't know if personality tests work in the sense that you can diagnose someone's entire personality. But I find that asking the questions of yourself and kind of going through the little quizzes or whatever the case may be makes you think about, you know, how do you respond to certain things and what makes you different from your friends, and talking through your results with other people, you often start to have a conversation of them saying, oh yeah, you're totally like that. And maybe you're like, am I really? And so you start to kind of uncover things about yourself in a way that can actually be really helpful, but that's also kind of fun and playful and not too serious.
Now, one exercise that you also recommend in your book, and for me, it feels like it could be a little bit scary. Maybe it's, I imagine it's quite helpful, and I'm actually going to go do it. But it's doing a personal audit of our time. And I don't know if other people get this, but the time you spend on your phone when you get that report on Sunday, it always makes me a little irritated because I don't want to confront it. But why might a time audit be really beneficial for people?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's just helpful to see how you actually spend your time, because we probably all have an idea in our head of how we spent it and how much time we spend doing different things. And when you do get that screen report or whatever the case may be, and you realize, oh my God, you know, I'm telling people I'm too busy to hang out, and really I'm just spending all of that time on my phone, it's kind of a wake-up call. But, you know, I think it just helps you kind of recalibrate and decide, okay, do I want to be spending that much time on my phone? And maybe you're in a place where you're like, I'm having a hard time right now, and like looking at certain apps actually makes me feel more connected with people or makes me feel better, and that's okay. But if you're looking to get more time back, or you're wondering, how come I can't get out of bed in the morning, or why am I always rushing in the morning? And it's like, oh, because I'm spending an hour in bed scrolling. That's really helpful, and it's a fairly easy thing to fix. So I think just going through how you spend your time, and if you're happy with it, can help you decide, okay, where do I want to shift things to feel a little bit better at the end of the day or at the end of the week, and feel like I'm not wasting my time, that I'm spending it the way that I want to be spending it.
Right now, we are talking with Rachel Wilkerson Miller, author of The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and for Your People. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's a small thing that you do to show people in your lives that you're listening and that you're really paying attention? What do you do for yourself so you can be more present in your other relationships? And what have you done to maintain your friendships? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, and we will take your calls and continue this conversation right here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we continue our talk with Rachel Wilkerson Miller, a deputy editor at Vice and the author of The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. And you can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Rachel about her book and about how you can show up for other people? What steps have you taken in your own life to be more present? Call now, 800-642-1234. 642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Now, Rachel, one thing that comes up a lot is sort of a culture of being comfortable canceling plans or flaking on things. I keep making admissions on the air, but sometimes I love when people cancel on me, and sometimes I love canceling on other people, but then later feel less good about that. Can you talk a little bit about how you think of, you know, canceling plans or just general flakiness?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm also guilty of feeling relieved when somebody cancels. I, you know, sometimes I have to cancel myself. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I just think it's really important to be thoughtful and intentional about it and don't just cancel without a second thought. So first and foremost, better have a good reason and then communicate that reason to the person that you're canceling on, and then sort of immediately offer to reschedule so that it communicates, I care about you. You know, this isn't, today is a problem, but I still really want to see you. So I think that's really important. But I think also thinking through like what the cost is to them. So if you had tickets to go to something together and, you know, you really want to bail, maybe you offer to pay the cost of their ticket since you're inconveniencing them. Or, you know, if you have to cancel your manicure appointment with your friend, you can pay the cancellation fee. So thinking through that kind of thing kind of makes you think, okay, is this actually worth it to me? And a lot of times it is. It's like, I get what I want. I don't have to do this thing that I just don't have it in me to do, and I'm willing to pay for it. And other times, in thinking through it in that sense, you're like, no, I should just go. And so I think that can be a really helpful way of thinking about it. And then I also feel like if you want to cancel, you kind of have to do your own little homework and think about, okay, why did I need to cancel? How did I maybe not schedule this in a way that was actually doable for me at the time? Did I think like, yeah, I'm totally going to be fine to do something on a Monday night at 8 p.m. across town? If that's, you know, like we all make those mistakes, but I think it's important to learn from it. And the next time somebody asks you to do something across town, you know, that late on a weeknight, you can say, you know, I usually don't have a lot of energy on Monday nights. Like, can we reschedule for Saturday afternoon? I'd love to see you. So making sure that you're taking a little lesson away from it and kind of communicating, I don't want this to happen again and again. I want to learn something so that I can get better next time. And I think that will make your friend feel better and will make you feel better because you know you're being a little more proactive about it.
Rachel, I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Alex in Milwaukee. Hi, Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, what did you want to bring up?
Well, I was just stating that a little inspiration that I get is I do music. I make beats, and just watching other people, even on YouTube or just outside of that, just hearing their inspiration on making their progress on making beats, trying new patterns, getting new sounds. That's just a lot of inspiration to keep going and in the field I'm in. You know, again, I'm really inspired by just watching other people get inspired. You know, that's enough inspiration within itself, I believe.
Alex, I have a quick follow-up question for you, which is when you watch other people succeed, when you succeed, how do you feel when people kind of give you, your props or kudos or anything like that?
Well, when people give me my kudos and props, you know, I feel great just because I'm learning in the process of, you know, watching other people progress. So, you know, it's kind of like a hand-in-hand thing, you know, they give me my props and I give them props as well.
Alex, thank you so much for that call. So Alex is a musician and there's a community of musicians. Have you found that, you know, you can show up for your people when you have similar interests, even if you might not be close friends or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as Alex was describing that, I was just thinking, gosh, that sounds so nice. And I feel like it's wonderful to have a hobby, but it's even better to connect with other people who share the hobby. And that's one thing that, you know, can happen. If you're on your phone, maybe you are connecting with people who are into the same thing you are, and you're really building each other up. And I've seen so much of that in Facebook groups and on Reddit, that people really do, they cheer each other on and they help each other out and they offer feedback and they're proud of you when you finish the project or whatever the case may be. And they're so happy to offer advice. And so I think, you know, like I said, it's great to have a hobby, but if you can find a way to connect with other people, it's like a bonus to kind of build on that. And it does feel really good. And it makes them feel really good too.
Alex, again, thank you so much for that call at 800-642-1234. And I'm going to go back to our listeners. We have Teresa in Fond du Lac. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
Well, love the topic. And, I just wanted to share that I attended a seminar recently with my job, and one of the questions was, think about the way you think. And I thought that was so deep, and that was just awesome. If more people thought about the way they think and change it, you know, if something's not working, change it. You're in control of your life. You're in control of the narrative, what's going on in your head. You're in total control. One thing I did several years ago, I was in a job that was very unfulfilling, and, you know, I didn't feel like they were utilizing my skills and my talents. So I couldn't leave the job. I needed the benefits and the salary. So I joined the Optimist Club, and that changed my life forever, because that's just a shift in the way you think, and you're with other people who abide by the Optimist Creed, you know.
And Teresa, did you find that that shift made it easier to make the career change your life?
Yes, it did, because volunteering outside of work helped me not think about the unhappy job day in and day out. It helped me shift my mind into doing more volunteerism and knowing that my skills and talents were going to be recognized and valued. I might not have gotten paid for it salary-wise, but I got paid for it in so many other ways that money couldn't buy, like the friends that I made, the volunteerism, the monies we generated back for the Fond du Lac community. I mean, it was, to me, you know, volunteering is kind of what saved me, and abiding by the creed and aligning with other people who were like me. And it helped me focus not so much on the job, let's put it that way.
Teresa, thank you so much for that call, and congratulations for finding your people and for being able to make that shift in your life. Rachel, what were you thinking when we were talking to Teresa just then?
Well, a couple of things jumped out at me. First is the volunteering aspect, and I've interviewed a lot of therapists throughout my career for different articles that I'm working on, and volunteering comes up again and again as a way to sort of pull yourself up when you're feeling down, when you're really stressed about the state of the world, which I think most of us are these days, that volunteering is a really, really beneficial thing to do. And so I think it's really smart that Teresa went there. You know, you get out of the mindset, you realize you're more than your day job, and you meet new people. And so it just gives you so much. So I think that's so smart and such a good tip. And then I also think that the Optimist Club thing is so interesting, in particular, because I think we often forget that, you know, commiserating with people is fun. We're all, you know, we all do it. We bond with our coworkers sometimes by complaining about things. But to do that day in and day out, it really eats away at you, and it just makes you feel really low. And so I think finding some way to shift that, whether it's making a new friend who seems more upbeat, whether it's something more formal like the Optimist Club, just recognizing, okay, I think I'm really, I hear myself, I'm complaining too much, I'm too negative, I got to change how I'm talking about things or who I'm talking to about stuff.
We're talking to Rachel Wilkerson Miller, the author of The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. So I feel like we have barely scratched the surface of what people can do and how they can live with more intentionality, how they can foster friendships, and really show up for those friendships, but also really take the moment to show up for themselves more consistently. You know, what did you learn as part of the process of writing this book?
Gosh, I learned so much. There's so much interesting research into how people connect and the things that they talk about. One of the things that really surprised me was interviewing a therapist named Ryan Howes about what to do with a friend who's venting too much, which I think we've all been on the receiving end of somebody who just can't stop going. And I wanted to ask him, hey, when can you kind of cut them off? And I thought it was going to be this really like, you know, you got to hear them out for this long. And he was just like, as soon as you get bored. And I was so shocked that he was just kind of like, yeah, you don't have to like sit there and listen. You can say to people, hey, I think we need to change the subject. I'm having trouble focusing. Or, you know, we've been talking about this for a while. I haven't gotten the chance to share anything with you. And I was so taken aback by that. And it was just such a good reminder that sometimes the answer is so much more simple than we think it is. Like your friend is going on and on about something day after day. You can just say, hey, I it's my turn to talk. You know, you could say it nicely, but like it's totally fine to tell people how you're feeling and they'll totally get it and it won't be a big deal. So just remembering that sometimes the answer isn't that complicated. We have the tools that we need. We just need to speak up and say something.
Now, you know, as part of writing this book, you get personal at times. Was being vulnerable, you know, part of the process? And is it something that you are going to, I guess, continue to do moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was hard for me to sort of avoid talking about what I had been through in my life. My dad died when I was young. I went through a really shocking and unexpected divorce several years ago. And both of those things really shaped how I think about these things, how I show up for myself now, and how I show up for other people. And so, you know, I felt like I had to be emotionally honest and tell people, this is why I feel so strongly about this, because I've been there and I've been on the receiving end of people who showed up for me. And I've gotten the gift of being able to do it for other people. And that's so meaningful. So, you know, one of the tips in the book is that showing up takes vulnerability. And so it's important for me to practice what I preach and to be vulnerable, you know, when it's warranted and to put myself out there. I also struggle with that. If, you know, I sort of joke that I write like one personal essay a year where I share sort of more things about my life, because it's hard and it's uncomfortable, particularly to strangers. But when it comes to sharing with friends, I really try to do that. And I know it's hard, but it takes practice. But it's just in the past couple of years, I've really seen how it build such intimacy when you've got these people in your life who you care about and who you trust, and you tell them, hey, I'm going through a really rough thing. It's a relief finally to tell people when you're struggling, because then they can help you and they want to help you, is what you'll find out.
So, Rachel, we only have about 30 seconds left, but for people who have listened that say, hey, this sounds awesome and I want to do this, what is the first step?
I think the first step is making that choice of saying, I am worth it. And everything else stems from that. You have to prioritize it and you have to believe in it, because it is hard. And there will be times when it's difficult to set boundaries or reclaim your time or say no to people. But I think if you have that like deeply held belief of this is my priority, I need to do this, this is, that will set you on your path forward, and everything else will follow.
Rachel, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Rachel Wilkerson Miller is a deputy editor at Vice and the author of The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People.